Donalena Kitchen talks about food. Donalena Kitchen talks recipes. Donalena Kitchen talks about lots of other things on community radio. Welcome to the Donalena Kitchen. My name is Lana Noctigal.
And I am Donna Prisgintas.
This is the Donalena Kitchen. We get together and talk about food and lots of things that you would talk about around a kitchen table. Valentine's Day is coming up, and today we're going to consider sweet things and chocolate,
of course.
But first, a little note. Support for this fine program comes from Wheatsfield Co-op, your full-service natural foods grocery in Ames. Community-owned, community-focused since 1974, open daily 7 to 9. Located downtown at 413 Northwestern, just off Main Street in Ames. Everyone can shop Wheatsfield Co-op. So, sweet things, chocolate. If you have a Valentine already, think of giving them something sweet for the holidays. It's tradition. Or if you don't have a Valentine yet, make some chocolate, and I'm sure someone will develop an interest in you.
Or make it for yourself.
Be good to yourself. Donna, what do you have to say about chocolate?
Well, we're going to do two recipes today throughout the program, and one of them will be a sort of more modified low-fat dessert chocolate, if you can. It's sort of like an oxymoron is low-fat chocolate, but we'll do that one. And then we will also do a Grand Marnier hot chocolate, which will be for those of you who are culinarily impaired but still want to make something fairly simple. So I wanted to talk about chocolate, the most glorious food, one of my all-time favorites. The Latin name for the cacao tree is Theobroma cacao, meaning food of the gods. So you can see I do concur with that. And it comes from both the Mayans and the Aztecs, and then was taken back to Spain during the conquistadori period and kind of took over everyone's delights in Europe. Now, in South America, originally, they didn't make it in the sweetened sort of way that we like it. It was prepared more like coffee, actually. You know, both coffee and chocolate come from beans. Both of them do have caffeine in them, although chocolate has far less. Both of them do have antioxidants in them and things that are actually good for you, if you need an excuse. There are many traditions where you don't sweeten your chocolate, so it's bitter, like coffee.
Like coffee, are beans, the coffee beans or the coffee seeds, are they roasted or fermented or are they roasted first or are they sweet just like that off the tree?
They're not sweet.
But they're chocolatey off the tree.
Well, they come in these odd-looking pods, and you kind of peel it out, and you have the beans, and then they're ground. So you can actually have raw cacao. Huh. And there are starting to be a few products on the market because apparently for people who are really into this, the raw cacao does preserve the antioxidant nature of it and makes it healthier. Now, they do say that if you are actually eating chocolate to for its health benefits, that you need to be eating the 70% chocolate, which means it's a very dark chocolate. It's not very sweet. It's higher in the cocoa solids, which are not the fats somehow. There are people in Los Angeles. The last time I was there, I went to a specialty cocoa shop where they grind the beans, and then they have a little bar like a coffee bar, like a barista, and they mix it either with water or milk, however you like, and unsweetened, and they whisk it right in front of you in a little glass, and you drink it. And it is actually very bitter, like unsweetened coffee. So it's very trendy that way, you know, to make your own chocolate.
Oh, it sounds delicious. I'm a coffee person, but who could not like chocolate that
way,
too? Well, it sounds lovely.
That you can actually buy in Ames at Wheatsfield for sure. And I also saw some things maybe at at the Hy-Vee in their natural products department. Cocoa nibs.
Nibs.
I've used them in fudge, nut brittles. They're actually broken up bits of the bean.
Oh, I thought they were just broken up like candy bars. No, they're not little chocolate, like, it's not like chocolate chips.
No, not at all.
These are more intense.
Yeah, and if you crunch a few of them in your mouth, you'll see they're extremely bitter. But if you're making, like, adult chocolate chip cookies, for example, and you put chocolate chips in and you put a few of the nibs in, they're smaller than chocolate chips, much smaller, because it's just a cocoa bean looks sort of the size of a coffee bean. So a nib is a broken up cocoa bean. So you they're not crushed to powder, but they are like they're crunchy, but they're not too hard. They're more like a bit of a maybe harder than a piece of a walnut or a pecan, but you know they do crunch in your teeth. So if you were to make chocolate chip cookies, for example, and you put a few cocoa nibs in it, that would sort of make it a little more adult flavored because it would be less sweet.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So if one is going to eat chocolate, you know, in the healthy way, you have to be buying the darker chocolates. And they do say medicinally, chocolate and medicinal. Do you think those two words go together?
Oh, I think so.
Oh, yes, yes. Well, medicinally, you should be eating at least 70% cocoa. Now, that means when you see these bars in the more high-end bars, they will say 55% cocoa, 65% cocoa, 70, 85. And you can get the extremely dark bars at around 95%. And believe me, they are not sweet.
Mm-hmm.
But they're very interesting flavor. So from 70 up, apparently, I don't know why they picked that as the cutoff line. And I have read slightly different things. But apparently the darker the better in terms of antioxidants. I also, and I think I'm certainly not the only one, we're as a country, we're moving a little bit more towards the bittersweet, which is still sweet. It's just not terribly sweet.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Like I know at Wheatsfield they sell chocolate chips. They're called bittersweet, and they're at about, I think, 62%, which I still find fairly sweet. And like when I make fudge, I use that one and don't. And I also reduce the sugar usually in my chocolates. I would suggest for people that are curious to buy, you know, like the standard candy bar that maybe you ate as a child, like a Hershey's or a, you know, something quite available, and take a bite of that, and then also have one of the more newer high end bars that perhaps have a little higher cocoa content. You know, maybe even into the 62 range, or, you know, if you go above 62, it won't be a good taste test comparison because they will get much more pronounced in their bitterness. But try the two, you know, the less expensive one and the more expensive one. I have to say with chocolates, I think you get what you pay for by buying a more expensive item. It's not just that it's trendy or in a nicer package, or it does have more expensive ingredients, because of course the higher the cacao content, the more expensive the cost to make it is. So I would recommend, just kind of, if anyone is wondering about why, and there are many, many new kinds of candy bars on the market.
It seems that 20, 30 years ago, in your mom's kitchens and our early kitchens, you could get baking chocolate. That was about it, and you'd get this bar of baking chocolate.
Well, you
and
you
that
could,
was it. But you, now there's so many more things to enjoy.
Well, even in baking chocolates, the standard unsweetened bars have been around for a long time. You could either buy the, you know, the regular ones or the unsweetened bars. Just plain old American chocolate. Not that the chocolate is made. I don't believe any chocolate is grown in America. I think it's all imported. Which reminds me, on the packages, there are all these labels. And some of the labels are organic or not. Non-GMO verified was a big label that I kept seeing. And one that I think is important is the Fair Trade logo is on a lot of chocolates, or some of those things that indicate fair trade. And what that means is, and this is true of coffee too, that the growers, the kind of small, it's like the small farmers in Iowa, the growers are actually paid a fair rate for their cocoa beans in a way that they can have a right livelihood, basically.
Yeah, one of the saddest things I read when I was just finding out about this fair trade program and the equal exchange and paying farmers for what they grow equally and fairly, I heard that in some coffee plant or not in some in some chocolate plantations, the growers, the people that actually pick the beans and do all the harvesting, can't afford chocolate, so they'd never tasted it because they ship everything out, and their job is to get it out of the field, off the trees, and to you for the processing, and they couldn't afford chocolate themselves, which actually is a good thing to remember because that happened with a lot of things. There's a lot of cash crops that
are cash crops.
That does not mean cash goes to the farmer necessarily. That's why we have to back up a little bit and make sure that the people that are actually doing the work to get us our good chocolate can get a fair amount of money for doing what they're doing. Let's make things fairer here because we're dealing with a product that
takes a lot of labor.
And we it's not like we have to have chocolate to live. That's debatable.
Speak for yourself.
That's debatable. But we should be willing to pay a good price for such a wonderful gift. And the fact that it's an American. It's a new world product. It wasn't always grown in Africa or in the warmer climates around the world. But a lot of it is now because plantations get moved over there, plus in South America.
And I believe Indonesia is a chocolate producer. coffee and or chocolate are the second most, internationally traded product after oil, if you can imagine that.
No.
Yeah. We got quite a lot of habits going on here.
Well, let's certainly hope we don't have to employ our military-industrial complex in behest of chocolate because we could slow down a little bit. Oil has been kind of a nasty thing as far as being able to afford it and making sure that we have oil in our cars or gas in our cars. Let's make sure we have chocolate in our tummies.
Yeah, but can you imagine if we had no tea, chocolate, or coffee in our caffeinated world?
People might get a little upset. So for Valentine's Day, here we think about sweets and chocolate and showing our love for one another by passing off these wonderfully sweet things. I have a little divergent thing here. This isn't about chocolate, but it is about love. It is about a campaign that we have all kind of been part of here.
It's about caring for other people.
Yes.
It's almost like fair trade, you know.
This is kind of a fair trade thing that hits closer to home. There are people in this country that work really hard to make sure we get the kind of things that we want. And I'm talking about a company called McDonald's. This information comes from an editorial by the writer and commentator Jim Hightower. I love his sense of humor and his way that he dives into issues. And he dives into a lot of issues about food every now and then. And this is from an article called How Tacky Can the Golden Arches Get? For over a decade, McDonald's has pushed its product with an advertising slogan that exuberantly proclaims, "I'm loving it." And since we're moving into Valentine's Day, "I'm loving it" is a good thing to think about. But now McDonald's is scrambling and not necessarily talking about eggs.
Yeah, their business is dropping off a bit. Their latest quarterly report in the financial press was a bummer for them.
Right. And part of that had to do with what Mr. Hightower refers to their boneheaded response to the remarkable ongoing rebellion by the fast food workers who are demanding a $15 an hour wage and the freedom to unionize without corporate restrictions. The overpaid and clueless executives at McDonald's responded by, guess what? retaliating against hundreds of employees who joined the protest. Big Mac managers illegally reduced the hours and therefore the pay of those who joined the Fight for 15 campaign. They spied on them.
This is un-American.
They interrogated and threatened them and imposed restrictions on their freedom even to talk about unions or working conditions. The corporation now faces federal charges on hundreds of labor law violations.
Oh, dear.
So you'd think they'd sort of wise up and pull themselves up and say, okay, folks, we'll pay you a fair wage and we'll let you unionize. But instead, their response has been to up their ante with this campaign of love from McDonald's. They say, who better to stand up for love than McDonald's? So love and the golden arches, And loving it because you're sitting down in McDonald's eating.
Oh, right. The campaign is called I'm Loving It.
I'm Loving It. But it turns out putting the words of love in the mouths of the people that do their ads doesn't sell more burgers. In fact, the customers have been putting fewer Big Macs, Chicken McNuggets, and other McEdibles in their mouth, causing the sales to sag. So we hope they change their minds eventually. We hope they don't fritter away their opportunity to do the right thing here, because guess what? The CEO of McDonald's is paid $9.5 million a year, plus full health coverage, platinum pension, private use of a jet. Where else but America can you be so enriched for preaching good loving while directing your corporate lobbyists to kill any increase in the poverty wages of your employees? Just ask the protesting workers about the love they're getting from McDonald's. To be fair, the bosses did make one change, new uniforms, supposedly to buff up the corporate public image. However, most of the low-wage employees were forced to buy the uniforms themselves. How's that for McLove? So thinking about love, fair wages, and food for Valentine's Day.
It might be easier to give them a pay raise and spend less on advertising.
You'd think, now wouldn't you?
Well, that might get them free mention in the, like, stories about their goodwill, which don't cost anything in newspapers.
Right. We might even say something nice about
good
them.
Good publicity.
Right.
So
that information was from an article by Jim Hightower called How Tacky Can the Golden Arches Get? So keep thinking about fair trade chocolate.
It's okay. You weren't going to take your Valentine's person to McDonald's for Valentine's Day anyway.
No, hadn't really thought about that. But some people might, and keep that in mind. There's people there that work just like the people that pick the chocolate. Okay. That's good.
So, let's see. Where are we? Valentine's Day. Oh, did you have a poem, Lana?
Oh, we do. This poem is not about chocolate, but it is about food. And it's from a poet who lives right here in Ames, and she is teaches English and teaches people how to talk on the ISU campus.
Would that be elocution?
Teaches people how to write, talk, and think. She's a poet. She teaches people how to write. And her name is Brenna Dixon. I first ran across this poem a couple years ago when she was reading it at a poetry reading, and I didn't know her at the time, and after she read this poem, I thought, I have to get to know this woman. She writes about her relationship with a pineapple.
This is the aptly titled Pineapple, a Love Poem. Oh, pineapple, you sit before me so round, so knobby. Green tuft rising out of the fruit of you, and I want you. Want to suck you down and peel you clean. I want the sweetness of you between my teeth. I want you in pieces before me, honest and bare. I want to consume you, all of you, in one sitting. I want you on my porch in the heat of summer, sweaty and tart. I will love even the core of you, the tough middle everyone throws away. I want to mix you with sticky rice, freeze you with chili powder so I can eat you as paletas. I want you in all forms, on all days, always. And when you're gone, just empty skins at the bottom of my trash can, I'll go to the store and buy another for $3.89.
Well, that's a little poem for Valentine's Day.
It's practically risque.
It is, but if you have your heart pounding a little bit there, we hope you have good thoughts about pineapples. Yes, yes, that's good. Valentine's Day always brings thoughts of love. You're listening to KHOI. This is the Donna Lana Kitchen. We'll have a little tune here. What's better for Valentine's Day than a waltz? We're back. This is the Donna Lana Kitchen. That was a piece of music from, actually, that's an Iowa-grown piece of music. It was written by John Gooden. He's an instructor up in the northeast part of Iowa. He's from Luther College, actually. And he's part of a band called Contratopia, a fine dance band. Part of the band is from the Decorah area, and some of the band members are from the Minneapolis area, and they get together and make fine music. And John Gooden writes wonderful tunes. That was a waltz called The South of France. We're thinking about waltzes and romantic sort of things today because we're considering upcoming Valentine's Day and sweets and chocolate and and chocolate. And Donna, tell us more about chocolate.
Well, we're quite in the mood here. Our engineer, Rick, has turned on the red lighting, and we've been waltzing around with this music, and now we are about to eat a chocolate souffle.
Oh.
Of course, it's not souffled at the moment. It's a fallen chocolate souffle. So it's more like a – it came out kind of like a flourless chocolate cake, which – although there's a little flour in it. I like it.
So what's the difference between a flourless chocolate cake and a souffle? Kind of the same idea, right?
This actually has 2 tablespoons of flour in it.
Okay.
But the I like this recipe a lot. I used to make it – when I had all my Hollywood clients who, of course, want, you know, the full eating experience with no calories. So this wonderful cookbook writer, Alice Medridge, in our national obsession of the low-fat, no-fat period, she is a great dessert cookbook writer, actually. So she wrote this one. So she took all of her traditional recipes and reduced the calories significantly. I'm licking my fingers with it. So this recipe, and we are going to post this, is over a double boiler, you mix 5 teaspoons of – oh, well, first you have to get the little cups out, and you spray them, you know, like ramekins, basically. You spray them.
Ramekins. They're little teeny tiny little
like custard
bowls.
Cup kind of things, because these are individual portions. And you spray them. I frankly just used an olive oil spray because you don't taste it very much. And then I put a very fine sugar around the inside to coat them. So you just set that up and then you put them all in a baking tray.
Oh, that's a good idea. Put not only oil or grease the inside of the pan, but sugar.
Sugar
the
a little bit. Right.
Oh, good idea. Oh, and that also makes kind of a nice little sparkly edge to it, too.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's good.
Oh, it's so good. I'm shocked. I've been made these for about 5 years and maybe more.
Well, it's a good thing we got out the old recipe book again, huh?
Well, I was wondering if she gives calories in here. Yes. Calories per serving, 127. Fat, 2.6 grams. Protein, 4.3 grams. Not bad. So anyway, you over the double boiler, then you mix the cup of powdered sugar, a half a cup of unsweetened Dutch processed cocoa. Now, I have to say, I used a really good one, a fair-traded organic one, and I put a little more than they said in there because I wanted it to be really chocolatey. So if they called for half a cup, I probably put, maybe an extra tablespoon or something. And then you put in 2 tablespoons of flour, and then you put a half a cup of low-fat milk and half a cup of water. And then you kind of whisk that till it thickens. It takes about 10 minutes while you're doing other things over the double boiler. Now, I, of course, don't even own a double boiler. I just take a pan, like a small stock pot, and put my stainless steel bowl over it, you know, mm-hmm. with the water not touching the bottom of the bowl. Okay, that's always what you have to do. Then you mix with your beater. Oh, I also put in something else you shouldn't put in. I put a little bit of that canela cinnamon, not the regular cinnamon, but the soft stick cinnamon. Gives it a kind of a fruitier depth of flavor. I can't leave anything without adding more flavor. So I did put that into the chocolate and some vanilla powder, I believe. You could also use vanilla extract. Then in a separate bowl, you whip 4 egg whites with a little bit of cream of tartar and 3 tablespoons plus 1 teaspoon, it's a little picky, of sugar. So you just beat those all up until they're really nice and fluffy. And then then when the chocolate mixture in the double boiler is thickened, you know, you've got a whisk in there and you're whisking it around and it gets quite thick, then you take it off the heat and you mix in 2 of the egg yolks.
Wait. Okay, the egg yolks are separate. They have
right. You've separated them because you've whipped the 4 whites. Oh. That leaves 2 extra egg yolks, which I just ate.
Okay, here we have a question. Because you have this hot chocolate mixture, do you have to let it cool down a little bit? Because if you add the egg yolks right away, don't they like cook or get stringy?
You have to whisk while you're doing it.
Okay.
And yes, you've taken it off the
Okay, so
off the heat. So you're not doing it over the double boiler anymore.
Okay, this is off. And so the quickly put in two of the egg yolks. Got it?
It really is very brownie-like, isn't it? It's amazing that it has so little fat in it. So then you fold in the whites into the chocolate mixture. And I don't think you do anything else. No, then you just put them into the souffle cups. And you stick them in the oven at 350 for about 15 minutes.
Oh, yes. Fold in the whites. I have, from a recipe that I remember a long time, I think it was for a flourless chocolate cake.
Very similar.
It had a great line. It said, again, do things separately. The whites are over here and the chocolate's over here and everything goes together. And in bold type, it said, if you have a large spatula, use it now.
Yes.
And folding in egg whites is, you have to do it dramatically. And you have to do it, you're lifting and you don't want to squish the air out of the egg whites.
No, you're folding
them. Lift and lift.
In circular motions. Oh,
it's one of those techniques that you learn. And it's fun to do. It's fun.
It's actually quite simple. Easy to turn in.
There.
What do you think of the texture?
It's wonderful. It's looser than a cake.
Mm-hmm.
Something to eat with a spoon. It's very pretty.
If you want to gild a lily, obviously you could put whipped cream on it. Or a flavored whipped cream, like a rum-flavored whipped cream. Or a bourbon-flavored whipped cream.
Or ice cream. Or pudding. So the recipe for this will be on the website probably next week. And it is called what?
It's called a chocolate souffle. But, we're not eating it right out of the oven because, of course, it falls. Soufflés always fall. But when you're doing it on purpose, you don't mind. Now, if you really want to serve it as a souffle, since it only takes 15 minutes to cook, you can, like if you're doing a dinner party, for example, you can prepare the batter in advance and chill it. And then when it's time for the, and if you have your souffle cups ready, you take it out of the fridge, you put it into the cups, you put it in the oven, and you cook it maybe 3 minutes longer than if it were at room temperature.
Because you're dealing with the colder
batter. And then
batter.
you serve it right out of the oven while it's still poofy.
Oh, and then your guests have the pleasure of sticking their own spoon in, and then it goes poof, and they eat it, and it's warm and it's good.
Yeah, but I don't mind eating it fallen. I think you just don't call it a souffle then, or you can call it a fallen souffle.
It's
rather like a fallen woman, you know.
It is, which sort of fits right in with Valentine's Day and all these thoughts of heaven knows what. That sounds like a really nice thing to have for Valentine's Day. Give us the name of the cookbook and the name of the author again.
It's Alice Medrich, Medrich, and it's called Chocolate and the Art of Low Fat Desserts. And there are a lot of other things. It's a very good book. I think it won a James Beard Award, it was a few years ago, but it's well worth having the cookbook.
That's a good thing to give you, Valentine's.
I'm munching this chocolate away.
You were talking about, you were telling me the other day about the food corps. I think we mentioned the food corps earlier on a past show, and something about research done in school lunchrooms, getting people to eat.
Children.
People will have no trouble eating chocolate. People don't generally have to be forced to eat. But there are other things that we have to kind of encourage people to eat, including vegetables. So tell me about what the food court came up with.
This was a study, and I don't think the food court did it, but it could have, because that's what they work on a lot is working in schools, doing gardens, teaching children, what vegetables are and kind of getting them used to how vegetables taste, because, we do have a lot of food companies that spend an awful lot on advertising processed foods to children. But, we don't have a big broccoli eating campaign, so we're getting children who watch a good amount of television. They're used to having their posty, toasty tutas with cartoon characters, but no one is introducing them to the joys of apples, broccoli, and red peppers. So these young people are doing a lot of this work in the schools, and there's been a good bit of research. And one interesting study was, and this will go, you're going to go duh when you hear this. Can you imagine that children who eat lunch before recess eat less vegetables than children who have recess first and then come back and eat vegetables?
So you eat when you're hungry.
That's serious research.
Eat when you're hungry.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Can you imagine? I mean, I always grew up having lunch and then recess. Wrong, wrong, wrong.
Oh, what a good idea.
We could set the whole culture on its ear by giving children recess so that they're not eating as fast as they can to get out to recess. They'll come in hungry. Who would have thunk?
Right, right. And then there's also the thing about peer pressure. If you're sitting there, even if you come in after recess and you have a plate and there's vegetables on it, you look around at what the other kids are doing. I think that was part of the research too.
This is what the Food Corps girls told me, and this one I think it's very apropos. They have a saying, you know, so they're in the classroom, especially with junior high kids, right? And they're teaching them, oh, here, let's see what this carrot tastes like, and let's see what this, you know, they give them things that maybe they've not had. Like, I don't know what, asparagus maybe? I don't know. Children just don't eat vegetables. So,
kale, there eggplant.
There is a rule. It's called, don't yuck on my yum. So what they say to the children before they give it is, not everyone has the same taste buds, and even if you don't like it, it's rude because the person next to you might. And God forbid, if the most popular child in class tastes it and goes, oh, yuck, no one is going to eat it. So the rule is, don't yuck on my yum.
Good idea. Don't tell me what my taste buds do.
Right. Give everyone an opportunity to form their own opinion about it. And actually, that's just good manners. If someone is saying how much they love something, any sort of thing, and you go, ew, that's rude.
It is. It is. Don't do that.
And my mother used to always say, there's no accounting for tastes.
That's true.
Now, she just didn't mean just food taste, but it's true about everything.
That's true.
So, I will never yuck on your yum, Lana.
Well, thank you. Although, I think we pretty much both eat everything. But you know,
we do.
Well, I don't know. I went through this oyster thing. We had oysters, and that was kind of a new taste for me. So
was that a yuck for you? Because it's one of my yums.
Well, I like them now. The yuck of oysters was the texture. But once I got past the texture, it was good. See, so it's important to try new things.
They're good for you. You know, they're loaded with minerals.
Oh, good. So I'll dip my oysters.
That's why they're considered an aphrodisiac.
Oh.
They're very high in zinc and a lot of minerals that are supposed to be good for your hormonal systems.
Oh, another good Valentine's food.
Exactly.
Oh, yes, I think they do.
If I get stuck on a desert island, oysters and champagne. That's all I want.
And chocolate. Okay.
I could even forego the chocolate if I had the oysters and the champagne.
You're listening to KHOI. You're listening to the Donna Lana Kitchen. Support this radio station. Listen to us live. Listen to the live stream. Or download a podcast and listen to a past show. Go to KHOIFM.org. Support this radio station. This is community radio. Thank you. Welcome back to the Donna Lana Kitchen and chocolate and sweet things. Donna, do you have a few words about sweet things?
Well, I've been sort of reading and working with, what's it called? Coconut sugar. Now, it's a, I have some friends, some young friends in the natural products industry, one of which is a young man named Frederick Schilling, who was the founder of Dagoba Chocolates, which was then purchased by, I believe, Hershey's or somebody. But he called himself the chocolate alchemist. So he and another buddy of his went to Bali to grow more chocolates. And then they got into the coconut palm sugar. It's called the coconut. It's made from the nectar of the flower.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Coconut sugar is a natural sugar derived from the flower blossoms of the coconut tree, Coccus nuciferia. It's not highly processed. It has no additives, bleaching agents, or chemicals. I really like cooking with it. It does have a more brown, sugary flavor, but it's slightly less sweet in my taste, although you can use it in any recipe. This is the good news, because when you're substituting sugars, sometimes you have to make changes in the recipe. But coconut sugar can be used straight out, you know, teaspoon by teaspoon or cup by cup.
It's granular or liquid or
it
what?
Is grand. Well, they do have liquids too, like coconut nectar, it's called.
Oh, my.
Which is kind of, you can use like agave. But it's much lower in the glycemic index. Coconut sugar falls between 35 to 37%. Whatever those numbers mean. And other sugars such as muscovado and molasses have a range of 65 to 100 on the GI index. Date sugar has 100. Maple syrup has 69 plus. Honey has 70 plus. So it's much less of a blood sugar spike, which is actually really good for all of us, even though, you know, we're not worried about being diabetic necessarily. We don't need to overtax ourselves with these big insulin spikes. So for that reason, it's really good. I would think for young children, it might be a nicer thing. It is more expensive than sugar, but
it sounds like it would be more expensive.
It is
made out of the flowers. My goodness. It seems like you'd have to have a lot of flowers to make some sugar.
I guess so. But it has other it's environmentally friendly. The Food and Agricultural Organization, the people that gave us that award, have reported that coconut palm sugars are the number one most sustainable sweetener in the world.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Oh, because they grow on trees, literally grow on trees.
Right, and you don't have to, as with cane, you cut the whole plant down and start over again. With this, you just keep harvesting from the same plant over and over and over again. So it says that that makes it the most productive sugar in the world per acre.
Oh, for goodness sakes.
Yeah.
Good idea. So it's from the coconut.
The flower of the coconut
flower
tree.
Flower of the coconut tree.
Right. And it's also, you know, like those other products that we've just talked about, it's fair traded. Can be done. The company that Frederick is doing is called Big Tree Farms, and it's on many islands in the Indonesian chain and Bali, and they process it over there, and they have a whole this story is that Freddie's partner went over to everybody goes to Indonesia and Bali to, you know, the young world tripper travelers. So he and his wife, Ben, I believe is his name, were over there wanting to learn more about sustainable and rustic agriculture. And they got there and they were horrified because the people were using, and they said this, I was just shocked. They were using all kinds of pesticides and fertilizers that they would just mix in a bucket and throw out by hand.
Oh, for goodness
sake. I know. Poor the agricultural workers. They didn't, you know, they weren't given proper instructions. They weren't really trained. So Ben and his wife decided that rather than borrowing the techniques that were fading away fast, they would just go there. And so they moved to Bali and they helped restore traditional agricultural techniques and did, you know, some fair trade marketing. And so the coconut sugars, Big Tree Farms, are one of their products. And they do have it at the East Hy-Vee is where I've been buying it.
Oh, coconut sugars. It comes in a little sugar bag?
In a, you know, a pack.
Mm-hmm. A package.
Maybe it's a pound.
Mm-hmm. With the regular sugars or?
Yeah.
No, look.
It's
look.
In the sweetener department of the natural products part of the store.
Look for coconut sugar.
And try a little bit. I think because it's expensive, you might reduce your sugar intake, which wouldn't hurt also. But it's delicious. I made ice cream with it the other day.
Ooh, that sounds good.
Mm-hmm.
All these things are can be fair traded around the world. I have a little bit of food history here. A lot of foods come to us as the result of people trying things and bringing them to new markets. And this, I got this information from an article about food thievery, how there was some skullduggery and some snatching of ingredients and smuggling aboard ships and things like this. Two little articles here. Both of them deal with a bit of thievery and a little bit of reverse psychology in one. This is the bit of thievery. Thomas Jefferson, and this has to do with rice. Thomas Jefferson knew how important healthy farms were to his fledgling nation, and he didn't mind getting his hands dirty to keep his country strong. By the summer of 1787, the American rice industry had started to crumble. The rice was grown in swamps and stagnant water, breeding grounds for mosquitoes, making the workers sick. And so Jefferson, in his visit to France, found a new variety. The dry upland variety of rice, which was grown in Italy. There was just one problem. Italian law forbade the exportation of rough rice on pain of death. Jefferson, however, ignored that and used his power to declare the rice independent, secretly filled his coat pockets with the unhusked variety and made for the border and brought...
That's the diplomatic immunity, I believe, right?
Right. This is some skullduggery. He brought upland rice to the United States. And here is another bit of food stuff that went around the world, and that's the potato. Now, the potato went the other way from the New World to the Old. The potato came to Europe in the late 1500s, but it wasn't met with a warm welcome. Disregarded by most, it was first used only to feed livestock. But Frederick the Great of Prussia saw the tuber's potential. Sure, potatoes tasted bland, but they were versatile, cheaper than bread, and easy to stockpile. He introduced them to his army in 1744 and distributed potatoes to the peasants during a famine. But the people didn't particularly care for it. In fact, the town of Kohlberg was so put off that it responded in a letter to Frederick, "The things have neither smell nor taste. Not even the dogs will eat them. So what use are they?" So,
my dogs would eat them.
Ditz didn't put off King Frederick at all. He employed...
He added sour cream, right?
Well, he could have
And bacon.
That. Bacon. This case, Frederick employed some reverse psychology and established a royal potato field patrolled by soldiers. Soon, curious citizens were slinking around at night with stolen potatoes to plant in their own gardens. He made the potatoes royal. He made them extremely important. So everyone stole his potatoes, which is exactly what Frederick wanted. So a little bit of reverse psychology. Taste, like you said, there's no accounting for taste. So that's how the potato at least got a little bit of a better press in Prussia by Frederick the Great, making them a high-end, a sort of trendy item. Yes, yes. Oh, you were going to tell us about an easy chocolate recipe for Valentine's Day.
Oh, yes. This is the lazy person's chocolate treat for Valentine's Day. Okay, or we could also call it the cocktail of the week. It's a spiced Grand Marnier hot chocolate. So for those of you, and I'm thinking the kitchen impaired who would like to impress a particular someone special, you can just think of it like this. Make a really good hot chocolate, and I will give you a recipe here that's very special. And once it's made, you just put in how much? 1 ounce of Grand Marnier and put whipped cream on the top. Very special. Now, you obviously could use a chocolate. A hot chocolate mix, if you wanted to, but this one is really, you just melt the chocolate, 2 ounces of 72% bittersweet or some kind of bittersweet that's been chopped up in a cup of milk, and he adds chili pepper, half teaspoon of cinnamon, 3/4 teaspoon of brown sugar, 1/2 teaspoon of vanilla. 1/2 teaspoon of salt, my goodness, 1/2 teaspoon of black peppercorns, and 1/2 teaspoon of whole allspice berries, and a pinch of cayenne. Now, in South America, they do put chili in their chocolate. So this is pretty spicy, but you could make any flavor that you want. And then once it's all cooked, you put in the Grand Marnier. Well, in this case, you would have to strain it to get the spices out once they've been heated up. So then you strain it, then you add 1 ounce of Grand Marnier and put some whipped cream on top. And there you have it. That's a fast, down and dirty Valentine's treat.
Oh, be my Valentine. That sounds really good. That sounds really good. So, hope you all have something sweet in your mind to pass on to someone
who's sweet. Love.
And someone to love, yes. Yes. Donna and I did a soup stock class last Tuesday at Wheatsville Grocery, and it seemed to go very well. And there's other soup things coming
4
up.
Stocks in 30 minutes or something. It was like a marathon.
It was something else. It was good. There's a lot of soup gatherings, and we hope you take advantage of soup gatherings because there's one, the Democratic Soup Supper with Bernie Sanders is February 21st. And there's a slow food soup event in Des Moines on the 22nd. We'll talk about that more as it comes up. So you've been listening to the Donna Lana Kitchen with Lana Noctegal.
And Donna Prisgintas.
And Rick Morrison, who does us an excellent engineering.
And our chocolate souffle sampler.
He seemed to be really pleased with the whole thing. It was pretty good. We'll go out with more music by the band Contratopia. This is a tune called Hogwarts Express. Have a happy and love-filled Valentine's Day.
A delicious one.
With chocolate. Eat good food and enjoy life.